Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, here's Terry.
Good morning on this beautiful Colorado day. It is supposed to be gorgeous today, and what a great day yesterday. Yesterday evening was just beautiful, and today's going to be really good. Temperature might start dropping towards the end of the day today. We got some weather coming in, and during the course of the show today, we're going to talk to you about what's going on, what you can get out and do yet today, and then how this weather is going to affect things coming up, and what some of the changes might be and what might lie ahead. I mean, are we going to get into an early ice fishing season, or will it be more of a normal November, and we'll see the temperatures change, and we'll have the boats on the water for another month? We're going to talk about all those possibilities. If you follow us on Facebook, you would know that Karen posted a trivia question today, and we'll be doing that sometime during the show today, giving away a prize. Our next guest will be telling us what that prize is, and we're going to be joined by a couple special guests during the show, too. I mean, not only Ed Gorman's going to come on and give us the update on the pheasant population in Colorado, but we're going to be joined by Jackie. Bo-Crazy is what her Facebook page is, I believe, and she's the extreme huntress from several years ago out of Colorado, and she is competing to be the ultimate world champion extreme huntress, and we have between now and January to vote for her and see if we can't make something happen. And we just have a lot going on today. So let's get to the phones right now. And joining us is Austin Parr. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, Terry. Thanks for having me.
It's a beautiful day out there. Have you looked in your crystal ball? And I'm looking out next week. It doesn't look so good.
Oh, man. I've been looking at my forecast for some of these guide trips next week, especially early this next week. I think we're going to need to postpone some of those coming in. But in comparison to some of my notes from years past, man, we certainly have not seen fronts like this in quite some time.
Not this time of the year. I mean, what a crazy year it's been. You know, if we dial back till spring never went away till the end of June. It stayed cold. We never got a 90-degree day till the last week of June or the last couple days of June. So everything was behind, not only the fish, but the game, the upland game. Everything was late, and the fishing was hard to predict. Then all of a sudden, we had 2.5 months where it got extremely hot and dry. The water temperatures went back to normal suddenly above, and then lasted into the fall longer than usual. Finally started seeing true fall weather and looking like we were getting kind of caught up on where we were for the year. And then, bam, a little bit of winter shows up. So it's been quite a year.
Yeah, it really has. And it really has affected a lot of these bites and different hunting opportunities, certainly, as we've moved into this fall here. And with some of these temperatures dropping, what I'm hoping for is once everything stabilizes after these fronts pass, maybe we can get into some consistent weather patterns and get some of these walleyes especially fired up. Now, it's been different. You know, we've seen some late turnover, and the bite has gone from good to bad to back to good again, and I'm hoping we can get a good November in.
I'm still hopeful, and I'm gonna prepare for both. I'm gonna start putting new line in my ice fishing gear because we might, especially in the mountains, we might have some early ice. By the way, Austin, you're gonna be joining us in the second hour, and you and I are gonna talk some pheasant hunting and maybe a little bit about ice fishing then too. So let's talk right now about what's going on. If somebody has time to get out today, what are you seeing out there?
Well, today I think would be a very good day to get out, particularly the second half of the day with some of these pressures dropping. And when that pressure drops, particularly in this fall time frame, I really feel like the walleye bite can turn on in a really big way. So Chatfield in particular has probably been fishing a little bit better than Cherry Creek. Cherry Creek has not really fired off into its typical fall pattern, in particular like the one we saw last year where we had all those big fish coming, but it just has not materialized yet this year. But Chatfield did turn over in the past week, but it has had, you know, 5 or 6 days to get back to a steady level out there. And I'm feeling that these walleyes are going to be getting a little bit deeper as we move into some of this colder weather patterns. And we've got a couple guys out on Cherry Creek right now, too, Mark Harrison and Kevin Gibbs, some of the guys that guide for me out there. And I have not heard anything from them as of yet, but I would probably still be thinking about Chatfield with some jigging wraps as we get out there in, toward the tail end of the day.
What are you seeing for water temperatures on the Front Range right now?
So this past front has changed it a little bit, but it's still hovering right around 50 degrees in the early morning. I've seen down as low as 46 in some areas. So that is indicative of some of these fall bites with your spoons and jigging wraps getting going.
You're right. It came late, but all of a sudden that water did cool off. We got some snow in it. The nights have been cool. And at that bite, if you can get the boat out, is going to, if it turns on the way we think it is going to stay good right up till freeze up where you can't put boats on. And so we could be headed into a really good season now. A couple of things that'll affect that bite, and let's discuss it a little bit. One is this bite really materializes on lakes that have a lot of shad or a lot of smelt, because it tends to stress those bait fish. They ball up in the cold water a little more. They tend to maybe gather more, not maybe on structure, but related to structure maybe a little bit. And you find those fish concentrated in areas. Chatfield's going to be different this year because we haven't seen the bait. Why don't you talk about when those bait balls show up and then what's happening at Chatfield?
Yeah, so as we mentioned, the Chatfield bite, as far as the shad are concerned, they have not really shown up much out there, and some of the shad that we've been seeing fish spit up have been as large as 5 inches. So there's not many, but there are a few out there. So finding the concentrations of some of those smaller balls of bait definitely will help you find those fish. But in areas like Cherry Creek, part of the problem with the bite has been the fact that all these shad have had fairly consistent water temperatures, and they've literally been everywhere. So whether you're in the main basin or you're up shallow, those fish have basically an unlimited supply of food to choose from. So as we get cold, however, hopefully it's going to kill off some of these shad, maybe make them suspend a little bit less. And when you can get some of those shad to push up on the edges of breaks and drop-offs, then you can present a thing like a jigging spoon or a blade bait or a jigging wrap that a lot of times relies upon bottom contact much better. So you can cast it out and snap it back, but finding those bait balls concentrated up against edges of structure is really what you're looking for. And then shifting over to Chatfield a little bit, these fish, in my opinion, are going to be more oriented on structure than they would on Cherry Creek, particularly for the fact that they're still going to be trying to find some forage. So if you can't find those shad balls, I have been finding a lot of the fish actually on the base of structure, much more so than you would find this time of year. So rather than up top, down the bottom of the structure has been the much better area to focus on.
Now, this phenomena should go on up and down the Front Range if things hold true. You mentioned turnover, and that can affect it. Turnover does, the fish don't stop feeding, but it does kind of get their equilibrium off a little bit. What turnover, folks, is when the water temperature, the density on top, gets heavy enough where it pushes down and mixes the lake. You see sediment come up. It makes the water dirty, and the only reason it really disorients is because now the entire lake for a few days is at the same temperature and the same oxygen level, and until it begins to stratify, the fish are so spread out, and they do feed a little less aggressively. You said Chatfield went through that. Have you heard about Pueblo, Boyd, any of those lakes?
I've not heard about specific turnover. However, Pueblo has been fishing quite a bit slower than it typically does this time of year. There weren't quite as many bait fish as there are normally out there, but the fish, from everything I've been hearing, have been quite spread out. And then as far as Boyd is concerned, that bite has also been a little bit slower up there as well this year, which is somewhat uncharacteristic. Even during the Colorado Walleye Association tournament about a week and a half ago, there were some really big fish that got caught, but there weren't very many fish overall that got caught. So I think that lake is also going to really rely upon a good heavy cold snap to try and concentrate some bait fish.
Now we get this cold, it concentrates the bait fish. I think a lot of the ramps are open till probably the end of November. Is that about right?
End of November, yeah.
Right. So,
and even Pueblo, you can go all year.
Yeah, that's right. Get out there. If this bite takes place, you talked about jigging wraps and spoons. Those are the favorite tools of this fall fishing for us. Kind of tell people how you approach and how you fish and how you choose the one you're going to fish with.
Absolutely. So first off, if I'm in a boat, I'm really trying to find either fish that I'm locating on structure or general bait balls that are in an area. And that's always the key. These fish are going to be concentrated in certain areas. And if you're fishing in areas where they aren't, obviously the fishing is not going to be very productive. But typically these techniques kind of started in a vertical jigging aspect. And if the fish are in deep water, certainly vertical jigging can be good, but definitely being mindful of some of the barotrauma where you're going to be bringing those fish up quickly. If you're catching them in anything deeper than 30 feet, you really want to make sure that you're bringing fish up slowly. But if I'm finding fish a little bit shallower, I'm almost always casting these techniques, whether it's a jigging spoon, a jigging wrap, or a blade bait. And there's some form of a yo-yo style retrieve. So on a jigging wrap or a jigging spoon, I'm casting out and letting it sink all the way to the bottom. I'm snapping it up fairly aggressively with my rod tip fairly high, so sitting in the neighborhood of 10 to 11:30 as far as if your rod tip is up on the clock. And that snap is going to be followed by only about one turn of the reel handle and trying to maintain some degree of slack line on every single pull. If you're reeling all the way down to that bait, it's not going to be as productive. And then as far as blade baits are concerned, it's the same kind of general idea with a cast and a slack line pull, but it's just going to be a much softer pull rather than that aggressive, sharp snap. Now, as far as color is concerned, it's just going to depend upon the specific fishery that I'm working with and even the specific day. If I'm on chapdeal right now with the lack of shad, perch colors have been much more productive than any of your shad-style colors. And then on places like Cherry Creek or other areas that have a lot of shad, such as Boyd or Pueblo, I'm focusing in either on a chrome, but many times a white and or chartreuse can work really, really good this time of year.
You're absolutely right. Now, a lot of people don't have spoons, blade baits, jigging wraps, Johnny darters. There's a number of those glide baits. The one from Pure Fishing is the Johnny darter. A lot of people make those. But we're going to change that for somebody because we're going to have a trivia question later on in the show. And you're supplying the trivia prize. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So we always talk about jigging wraps and blade baits and jigging spoons, but you know we're gonna give away some of these right now to somebody that knows some trivia. So I have a selection of jigging wraps, Johnny darters, and Johnson Thin Fisher blade baits, all of which are some of my favorites, and even a couple of jigging spoons in there as well that work really good as the water gets colder. And it's about a $50 value, and I've got it down here at the shop for anybody that's going to answer that trivia prize later in the show.
Yep, and we'll give that trivia question out. And if they, of course, follow me on Facebook at Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on Facebook, they will have a heads up answering it. Don't know if I'm going to ask for text yet or callers. I'm still thinking about it. Well, we got a couple minutes left. I want to hit on the jigging spoons a little bit because you tend to really gravitate to the blade baits and the jigging wraps, the Johnny darters. Those have been kind of your favorites. Where I'm a little more old school, before we really started using those the way we are now, they were ice fishing baits, and we found out how productive they were. But a jigging spoon, I still believe that if you're vertically right over them, can still be the number one bait. And I love using a jigging spoon, but I think people have a little trouble getting their arms around that because it doesn't look like anything. It looks like just a hunk of metal, and they don't understand. You own an aquarium, take a dime and just kind of flip it over. Don't spin it, but flip it and let it drop into the water. Watch as that flutters down. If you have any freshwater fish in your aquarium and most saltwater too, watch the reaction. It is incredible. It just triggers that reaction, predatory bite. And I'm still, jigging spoons kind of fell out of favor for a while, but I'm a big fan. I think that they should be part of your arsenal.
I completely agree, and there's so many different varieties of them, but as someone who sells all these lures, there's all kinds of different appeals as far as to fishermen, and there's peg appeal where somebody really likes the look of a lure, and then there's lures that flat out catch fish. And I kind of put jigging wraps and jigging spoons in that same category because they might not look the nicest. They look kind of funny sometimes, and people, like you mentioned, can't get their head wrapped around it. But particularly on that vertical jig, you incorporate a barrel swivel up above a leader on some super line, and you can drop that right down and give it some heavy snaps, and it catches all sorts of game fish. I mean, anything from your walleyes and your smallmouth, all the way up to if you head down to John Martin or out to McConaughey, where you can catch wipers and white bass and catfish on them. And man, they do work really well. And you just, in my opinion, fishing them the same way you would vertically on a jigging wrap, where you're letting it crash down to bottom and you're letting it fall on a slack line. And that's the other big thing that people really have to maintain when you're fishing a jigging or a jigging spoon, just as you mentioned, that it has to have a free fall to have the correct action. If you snap it up and kind of lower it down, in my opinion, it's not nearly as effective. So that's something to consider if anyone is going to be out there fishing jigging spoons over the next few weeks.
Austin, I have to let you go, but you're going to join us in the second hour. Ed Gorman is coming up, and we're going to talk pheasants, which I know is near and dear to your heart, so you might want to pay attention. We have all that and more coming up on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan. Terry Wickstrom Outdoors is brought to you in part by Sun Power Sports, Colorado's largest ATV and motorcycle dealer. Let's go right to the phones as we are rejoined by Austin Parr from Discount Tackle. And Austin, we had a lot of enthusiasm about your trivia prize that we just gave away about half an hour ago. I had him text in, and a ton of people texted in. By the way, folks, the correct answers were 104.3 The Fan. When I started in 1998, we were 950 The Fan. And Austin, it was very enthusiastic response.
Excellent. Well, I'm certainly glad, and I'm hoping that the winner will certainly catch some fish on all these different baits that we've got.
I think they will. In fact, I was going to do pheasants here, and then I was going to go to some ice fishing and fly fishing with you after the break. But let's just talk. We've only got about 3-4 minutes. One of the things I was talking to Nate that we were talking about in the last segment is right now when you're on the water, you need to be scouting for your ice fishing, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, when we start getting into this cold temperature, a lot of these fish are going to get into their wintertime pattern that they're not going to change a whole lot. And as that ice comes on, these fish will have a couple of weeks to kind of get settled into it without much pressure, or any pressure for that matter, if the ice isn't safe or if the ice doesn't come on until a little bit after boating. But they're going to get in these same patterns. They're going to be in the same type of areas. So if you have a GPS sonar or even a handheld GPS going around and finding these humps and drop-offs that are holding fish right now, a lot of times are going to be the same places we're going to catch fish in late December and early January.
Well, if you go to my YouTube channel, The Best of Fishing with Terry Wickstrom, there is a show I did at Doughty Reservoir using electronics. And I actually took a handheld GPS that I used when I was out in the boat. I marked a very large boulder that was out on a flat that everybody fishes that flat. When I went out, I found that boulder, located, drilled my holes there. People around me were catching fish, you know, one every 15, 20 minutes. I couldn't keep the fish off my line because I was on the spot that I had found during open water. It would have taken hours of searching to locate that boulder through the ice without GPS coordinates. And another go ahead.
I was going to say, that's just what you're so important about right there, too, is that if you get out in a boat, you can cover so much ground, just like as you mentioned. It's so difficult to go and try and say, okay, there is a hump in this area. I know it's generally here, but trying to drill and drop your sonar in there, it's difficult sometimes to get a picture of exactly how that hump is shaped. Whereas if you're out there on the open water and you can find a rock, like you mentioned, or a point or a drop-off or a weed line, it's just so much faster because you can get to that spot in the prime time of daylight as well.
Well, and this package you put together of jigging spoons, blade baits, shad wraps, Johnny darters, those were all traditional ice fishing lures before they ever gained tremendous popularity in open water. This bite starts like we think it is. It's going to transition right through to the ice.
Absolutely. And getting in some of those deep water humps, you're going to fish basically the exact same way you'd be fishing vertical off of the boat. And it is, so I'm hoping, going to be very, very productive. But the scouting, we can't emphasize that enough on whatever you're going fishing on the ice. If you can get out there a little bit in the boat before the ice comes on in any of these lakes, you can certainly find some areas that you're going to be more productive once the hard water comes.
My friend, I want to put you on hold. We come back. I don't know if you got to listen to Ed Gorman, but he's predicting a very good pheasant season. I want to talk about how maybe you do just a little bit of scouting or getting ready, and then I want to get your update on what's going on fly fishing right now.
That sounds excellent.
All right, we'll put you on hold. We'll be back on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan. Terry Wickstrom Outdoors is brought to you in part by Sun Power Sports, Colorado's largest ATV and motorcycle dealer. We're going right back to the phones, and we've been talking with Austin Parr. And Austin, we were kind of talking about the preview of ice fishing, and I want to get back and get a fly fishing update from you in just a minute, because I think people put their long rods away way too soon. But we had Ed Gorman on the show, and Ed and I talked during the year about what we think the pheasant outlook is going to be. And I know you're busy at the shop, so you may not have got a chance to hear, but he was cautiously optimistic 6 weeks ago. He is very enthusiastic that we're headed for a good year. But like every year in Colorado, every spot isn't going to be as good as others. And Ed and I are the mindset that if you have time, you should be out driving the roads in the areas you're going to hunt right now and looking for birds. How do you prepare? I know you don't have time a lot of times because you're guiding and managing the shop, but how do you try to prepare?
Well, you know, I have done a lot of scouting through a lot of dove hunting this year, so certainly have an idea on where some of these birds are. But the big thing that I've really found, particularly in the early season, if you can locate areas where the crops have been cut, a lot of them are going to be cut, I believe, by opening day, but getting into areas where those birds are going to be maybe out of the corn and into some of the cover, that a lot of times is going to be areas where I'm going to really be focusing on. And then also kind of off the beaten path areas as well. You know, right around that Holyoke area certainly gets hammered, but if you can drive a little bit further, that a lot of times is going to bode a lot better for success. And then additionally, sometimes, you know, the Corners for Conservation program, that has been just an absolutely fantastic program to be able to get, great nesting areas for these birds and great cover for them in the wintertime. But a lot of times hunters will kind of draw a bullseye on areas like that. So if you can get out and maybe walk some of those bigger, more expansive CRP areas, we've had more success doing that in the past.
You know, we had a little bit of controversy on the Facebook page. By the way, folks, if you want to stay up on those topics, follow me on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on Facebook. A lot of people were poo-pooing the hunting in Colorado. Now, we're not going to be South Dakota, and we're not going to be eastern Nebraska. But western Kansas, western Nebraska, we compare very favorably. And we do get a little more up and down because we tend to get a little more drought than rain the next year, and it's so dependent. But how do you feel about the quality of upland game hunting in Colorado?
I think it's very solid. And like I mentioned, it's just one of those things where you have to put the effort in, and it's always a cliche because they say you have to, you know, wear the boot leather on your shoes to be able to really get birds. And that really actually is the case. And if you put the time in and then also hunt on days that are going to be colder and more blustery, you always have better success on days like that. And if you go out and it's a really warm day and you're trying to walk through that ultra thick cover, a lot of times those birds aren't going to be there so much. So you have to adjust yourself a little bit, but in general, from what I've been seeing through some reports on some farmers that we know and seeing some of these birds just absolutely explode out of these cornfields as the combines are coming through, and then also what I saw dove hunting, I think it's going to be a fantastic year. And it's all a very localized deal as well. There's areas sometimes of regional hail that can knock out some bird populations in areas, or some areas may have not had as successful of a breeding season as others. But it's just all about putting the miles in, not only in your truck, but also on foot.
Now let's switch gears and go back to fishing. One of the things I wanted to make sure we talked about a little bit, especially with this cooler weather coming in, is that fly fishermen, I know a lot of times, though, it's winter's coming, they take out the vise, they sit down, they start tying flies. You got to be on the water now. Some of the best fall river fishing of the year is going to be in the next few weeks, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, we'll get past this storm here, and places like the Dream Stream are still going to be really productive for spawning fish for a number of weeks still to come. But other areas on more of your freestone style stuff, like a Colorado River or going down to the Eagle, all can be absolutely fantastic this time of year. The Colorado is still flowing really nice right now. And down through that pump house area, we should still have fantastic fishing for the next couple of weeks. And the Eagle is one of my favorites, particularly as you move down even to Eagle and past a little bit. There's some fantastic runs in there. And not only do you have good populations of browns, but also a few wild rainbows in those stretches as well. And egg patterns are going to be productive, but also a lot of betas have started to really be coming off over the last couple of weeks here. And places like Deckers and Cheeseman have had really good hatches, particularly on more of your overcast days. And you can find success in all these places. And, you know, it feels like it's going to be really cold and wintry for the next couple of days, but we're going to return to some seasonal temperatures pretty quick. And getting out on some 40 or 50 degree days can be super comfortable, not only for physically comfortable, but there's not many people on the river. And a lot of times the trout are just insanely active.
One of my favorite patterns this time of the year are streamers. Not only for not only for the browns, which are very aggressive right now, but even the rainbows and things to get in there, because the bigger fish are fattening up for the winter. And a lot of times when it comes to fishing some of these small midge nymphs and things, my eyesight isn't what it used to be. And maybe I don't quite lay the fly line down as gently as I used to, but I can get by throwing a streamer up at the bank and streaming it, making it come alive. And it can be so effective in the fall.
It really can. And not only can you catch very good numbers with that, but throwing big streamers really does give you an opportunity at very, very large fish in any of these bodies of water. Some of your biggest fish in the ecosystem, particularly your brown trout, are very carnivorous. And if they have an opportunity to eat a small trout or a goby coming by them with that streamer imitation, many times they take advantage of it.
What are some of the, suppose I don't want to drive up in the mountains. Maybe the weather's a little worse up there, although there's going to be really good fishing. Where are some of the Front Range rivers that are going to remain good for the next several weeks?
Well, Waterton Canyon comes to mind first, particularly if you have a bike or you can hike up halfway into that canyon. With that being a tailwater, the upper stretch is going to remain ice-free for the entire wintertime season and can offer really good fishing for rainbows and browns. But as you venture north a bit into the Bear Creek and Clear Creek drainages, they will remain fishable for the next couple of weeks, barring ice coming on with some of these fronts. But you may find some ice come and then recede again with some warmer temperatures. But smaller rivers like that are still very productive on dry fly and dropper presentations just due to the fact of the small pocket water. But I just downsize everything. I'll move into a small midge or blue-winged olive dry and then trail a little beadhead mayfly like a two-bit hooker or a little jujubatus, and then maybe even put an RS2 behind or a midge behind in order to imitate some of those smaller insects in the ecosystem. But those fisheries, although not large fish, there's many of them in those areas. And then even a little bit further north, the stretch below Gross Reservoir on South Boulder Creek will also remain ice-free for the majority of the season. You can have fantastic wintertime fishing and late fall fishing all the way through that whole stretch.
No, I couldn't agree more. In fact, the Big Thompson, which you didn't mention, I've had some of my best fishing there in days when it was 20 below a week before and then warmed up to 40 or 50, and the fish were all gathered in a pool, and I could just almost sit in one spot all day because there's so many, they didn't even spook. So I think the key here is don't put those long rods away. And, you know, another thing right now, up and down the Front Range, if you're especially a beginning fly angler, don't be afraid to go after the stock trout in places like St. Vrain and Bar Lake, and because those trout, as this water cools, and even Chatfield and Cherry Creek are going to be close to shore, and you can do well with a fly rod there too.
Absolutely. Stripping some small streamers with little woolly buggers and a hare's ear or a pheasant tail beadhead down below can be very effective in situations like that.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, we covered a lot of ground today. I want to thank you again for providing the prize for our trivia today, folks. You got to follow us on Facebook, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. We're going to be doing, not every week, but every week or two, we're going to do, every couple weeks, we're going to do a trivia, and the answer will be on our Facebook page, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. And also, when we have interviews with people like Austin, a lot of times we'll put links, but you can take, now, if you like what Austin was talking about today, go to 1043thefan.com. Go to my page, and they'll be by later today. This will be up there in a podcast. Austin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Terry. I certainly appreciate it.
All right, and you know, all those baits we talked about, tell them how to find you and where you are. Oh, he's gone. Discount Tackle around South Santa Fe. You know, stop by, and to Austin, we'll share information with you, and the things he talks about, he can walk over to the shelf and show it to you. We're going to take a time out. When we come back, we're going to talk to a very special guest. She was the extreme huntress many years ago, and she's back in a competition. Needs some votes so Colorado can come out on top. All that and more on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.
Oh. You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC. First
Bank. Banking for good.